get after it. It's a Tuesday morning right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 25th day of January, 2022. Gang's all here. JR, Simmer, and Hammer, and a little bit of light snow falling. It actually made the drive a little bit tricky for you this morning, so if you're out and about right now, just make sure you watch for that. Not enough snow that the plows are out or anything like that. Just kind of like it was last Wednesday, if you remember last Wednesday, and we had a number of accidents then. So just watch for it. Should wrap up in the next couple of hours. Rest of today, mix of sun and clouds, minus 10. That's not bad because we're going into a one-day deep freeze. Overnight low tonight, minus 31. And then tomorrow is going to be sunny and cold, minus 19, but a wind chill of minus 37 in the morning tomorrow, which I think may be the coldest last Friday or Saturday, whatever day it was super cold as well. But thankfully, it's only one day, looks like, because Thursday, Friday, more seasonable highs of minus 5. But a reasonable day today, a very cold day tomorrow, and then warmer Thursday and Friday. There's your weather wrap-up as we wake up this morning with you. We are sitting at, I don't know what the temperature is. I wrote it down.
It was minus 15 when I was coming
minus
in.
Minus 16, okay. Officially, at the airport. As we say good morning and hello to that disembodied voice that is Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
Good. Just checking my GPS, see if we've moved to Yakursk, the coldest city on the planet.
A very, very, very key place to have in risk, though. I love a little Irkutsk.
Yeah. Yeah. Also beautiful in the wintertime if you're trying to get your vehicle going. One of the keys there is you had to take out the blowtorch and you use it on your fuel tank just to heat up your fuel.
Doesn't sound safe. Excuse me now?
Yeah, that's exactly what they do have to do, Heber. It's so cold that it literally freezes to the point. Yeah, it is. Frighteningly cold, yeah. And I didn't expect it this morning, Jared. As you said, though, a little greasy. Also, man, I got to tell you guys, yesterday, I stop at the McDonald's at Billingsbridge. Oh. They've got the two garbage cans up. That's fine. I'll head over to the train yards. Now, today, I go in. Everything's good to go. Garbage cans aren't there. I get to the sign. I'm giving I give a couple yells, you know, kind of kindly, like, hello, hello. And then nobody's there. So then I go up to the window. I can see people in the back working. And part of me, as I turn the corner, I always say to myself, what if somebody's being murdered in there or something? Like, do I keep driving or do I help them?
No, I think you got to go in.
Yeah. That's what I kind of thought. And then I thought, well,
weapon or no weapon, but I want you in there.
But I'll be I thought I'll be late for my job.
You know what? You're right. Drive on.
If it's a hostage situation, I'll certainly call for a backup.
912.
But anyways, I couldn't get anybody. Like, come on, man. If you're listening at Billingsbridge and you're making the breakfast right now, I don't know what's cooking here. I thought we kind of had something
going.
Apparently
nothing's cooking.
Well, the guy a couple of weeks ago said, hey, I try to time it to make sure I have your coffee and water ready for you.
He's been fired.
Yeah, I hope so. So I ended up, I slipped over.
I hope so. He's back on CERB.
I slipped over to the old train yards. Uh-huh. Very efficient.
Yes.
But she was super greasy over there. As I got it. And
who were the person giving you the coffee?
Or the egg McMuffin.
The roads. So I made it into the show and ready to rock and roll.
Okay, and full coffee. That didn't drop it on the way in?
No. That's a one-off.
All right.
You know, that can happen to the best of them. But no, found a nice little parking spot there. And yesterday I thought you guys were kind of cheering me on as I was parking or doing such an incredible job leaving.
Yes.
Like, what was all the waving about and everything?
No, we were. Oh. We were really enjoying the fact that you had to back up through the entire parking lot, including through the gate, meandering through the many cars that are there.
Okay.
Both Hammer and I both
scratched my head, man.
Assessed it and looked at it and said, you know, I know you have a problem where you can't look to your right. Is it the neck, neck or shoulder?
My left.
But you do have to, one way or the other, if you drive in and park frontwards, at some point you are going to have to back up. So our theory and thought is it better not to do the part that you're uncomfortable with physically when there's fewer cars in the parking lot?
Please.
And, you know, do it at 5 a.m. as opposed to doing it at 10:30 when there's a bunch of cars.
Yeah.
And so that's just our thought.
And you have to back up the length of the parking lot.
No, I know, Hammer, but psychologically, I have driven into the spot. I would never at 5:30 in the morning in the dark attempt to park my vehicle back there.
You're my wife.
No, my wife is the same. No,
way.
I'm not.
I'll just deal with it later.
Like I don't really feel the vehicle. Like even that camera, I don't trust it. One of the things I got to do is I gotta get the camera because I don't really understand. I know it beeps a lot, but I don't really know how close I am. Like my depth perception is not very good, so I don't know if I'm.
The closer the beeps are together, the closer you are to hitting something.
I understand that, but there's people that are really good at it that'll be like a an inch away and be good to go. Like I'm still about a foot and a half and then I'm backing out. But then I also thought because there was a fella coming through the gate, because all of a sudden the lady in the office next to you, JR, was looking out as well. And then I thought, well, I think they must think I'm gonna ram the guy because why the spectacle out the window?
No, we're all just actually you couldn't hear it obviously being trapped in your vehicle. We're all cheering you on. It's like a pay-per-view.
Oh, there.
That's it, exactly. It is a daytime morning viewing of watching Sean Simpson back out of the parking lot.
Now,
and what could happen?
I noticed that you got a drive-in, like a drive-through this morning.
Yeah.
Maybe a car part, but you'll be able to exit going frontward. So today should be much better.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I parked right beside you, so we're good to go.
Yeah, I am high stress seeing you back up that much. It curls my toes.
Oh, okay.
It clenches other areas of my body because I'm just worried.
The
just-
anus?
No, but I'm pretty. But I'm cautious. I'm not good, but I'm cautious. Like, I mean, it may take me a long time, but I'm also not one of those people that's going to be like bumping around. So I get her done. It just takes a little while. Right. Now the pressure if you had family members in the vehicle, but I looked and then I said, oh gosh, that fella's coming in. I think they're worried that I'm going to ram right through the gate, but we were able to make it. And we're good to go.
Now when you and Mira are in the car together, do you always drive? Does she always drive? Is it a who goes out to the car first drives? What's the breakdown?
No, I usually drive. But she doesn't like my driving because I drive really slow. So I actually like to sit in the back seat when she's driving.
the dog is in the front?
Is this Uber?
Well, no, it can be whatever. The kids, no, I wouldn't sit in the back unless the kids are there. But no, she loves to lean on the gas pedal and I'm always like, easy, like going really fast. Like I don't like
that. So you literally like being a backseat driver?
Well, whatever, but right. I just don't.
Much easier in the backseat to be a backseat driver.
But she just rams on it. It's got a nice little six cylinder in there.
Yes,
so she
does.
Kicks up nicely.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not a fast driver, but I generally like to be in the because I'm
in control.
I'm a right leaner. I'm a right leaner both on the couch and in the vehicle. So I got the left hand up and I'm leaning right. Just like when I do the show, I said to Hammer, my left arm now has a bit
He's
of
hurt.
I have a sore arm because for 4 hours a day I place it on top of the chair here, the same spot. But that's my whole thing. That's my whole life is I'm holding on to the mic with my right and I got the left out. That's the way I like to drive, and that's the way I like to. Even I have the remote at home in my left, and I'm a right leaner on the couch. So that's just all.
Is there a scientific term for this?
No.
You need some physio.
No,
we're going to send you out and get this arm fixed up.
But do you guys like at home? I'm assuming like and with the dog JR and Hammer, whatever you're doing, you must have the same spot on the couch you always want to use.
Traditionally yes, but I've actually switched things up in the
last month or two, where I've
moved to a different section of the couch.
Okay,
and I'm quite enjoying the difference.
Well, we're about the move along,
huh?
That's a big life change.
It is. I don't know why, and it's more. When I sit and I'm doing work while I'm watching a game or whatever, if I'm doing work in front of the TV, then I'll sit in my usual spot. If I'm actually down there for just entertainment, like if I'm watching a show or whatever like that, then I like to sit in the other spot. Oh. So
you go into entertainment mode.
See, my lie down.
Yeah, no, I can't watch TV laying down.
What? That's,
no, I don't find
that's
that comfortable
outrage.
At all. Now, Hammer's got one of those like sectionals. I could see that one.
Yeah,
we've just got
that's
this,
what we have too.
We've got the straight couch, so that's no fun. But I find that I want. The table has to be right to my right all the time, right? That's where
of course everything in your life is to the right.
Yeah, but that's just and I assumed everybody else,
including your political leanings.
There you go, good call.
I need to be head on the TV. I can't turn my head at all. I don't like because then you get that kink.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all. The kids can have those spots. They've got nice young necks. They're just fine. Yeah. I need to be head on. There's three cushions
young
there.
Young necks.
Yeah, they got young necks.
I've never heard that description before.
Yeah, they can turn and they can face the
TV
that
way. Simon there. He's got a good young neck to him, that one.
Friday movie night. They're all along the wall. Yeah. Mom and Dad were at the end.
Couldn't agree more,
right
Hammer.
On.
You're absolutely so correct in that. You don't need any side. We don't need side television at our age. That's not a good thing for anything that's going on, right? Straight ahead.
The things we learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's kick off the show. 6:20. We'll take a break. Come back. We got lots on the agenda today, including an early morning guest. Buffalo Sabres are in town tonight to take on the Sens, and head coach Don Granato will join us on the show coming up in about an hour or so from now. Look forward to a chat with him and get an update on not so much the medical status of Jack Quinn, but how much Jack Quinn is impressed in his viewings of him in his couple of cups of coffee with the Sabres so far this year. So Don Granato will join us and help us set up tonight's Sens Sabres game, as it is a Sens game night. Mike Johnson is our TSN hockey insider. He will join us coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. We'll go through all the hockey stuff, including what is expected to be an NHL record-breaking night tonight from, of all people, Keith Yandel. We'll also tell you all about Canada's men's Olympic hockey team that was supposed to be on. You know, the names have been leaking out the last little while and was supposed to be unveiled today. Well, we'll be at 11 officially. Unfortunately, the IIHF kind of jumped the gun mistakenly yesterday and actually put out the roster. Anyway, we'll go through all of that with you as well. Go through all the hockey news. We got a bunch of other stuff, including, yes, Baseball Hall of Fame announcement day. Is anybody going into the Baseball Hall today? We'll discuss and debate that. We'll go through some of the football stuff as well, including the latest on Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and their future plans. But when we return, we'll kick it off with a little tennis, as we had a little late night down under for Canadian Denis Shapovalov taking on sixth-seeded 20-time Grand Slam champion Rafael Nadal. If you missed the news, we'll give you an update on how it all went down coming up next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 6:26 on this Sens Game Day Tuesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. It's a 7 o'clock face-off, 5 o'clock pregame show. The Sabres are in town. So it was 1 week ago today that Buffalo was here and scored a 3-1 win. That was the game, if you remember, where the winning goal was scored while a massive player scrum was going on at the Ottawa bench, which created some controversy. And nonetheless, the Sens will attempt to extract their revenge tonight at Canadian Tire Center, an empty Canadian Tire Center, as they kick off a four-game homestand, and this starts a run of 8 of 9 at home for Ottawa, which has played the second fewest home games of any team in the NHL. They only have 15 home games played so far. Calgary's at 14 after their game last night. So a lot of opportunity, unfortunately not in front of either any or many as 500 fans over the next 11 home games, but see if some home cooking can do some stuff, some good positive stuff for the Sens.
Yeah, incredible mental test share. Middle of winter time and not a long road trip and not one outside of the time zone here. But you roll back on a Tuesday. Building is empty. It's the Buffalo Sabres. And tonight, it gets personal, JR, because they came in to our house last week and they took away the points. But really, honestly, you're not waking up this morning.
Are you manufacturing hate this morning?
I don't know what I meant, but I'm just saying it's not easy. And you know, it's a long season. It's a grind. And I think this will be a real test. And I'll go back to Mr. Matt Murray after the game in Washington. I'm assuming that he's going to start tonight, as well as Forsberg played. This is a real nice test for a young hockey team because it's not the easiest game to get motivated for.
All right, so a day off yesterday for the team, but they did make three roster moves. I had some extra bodies out on the road, but now that they're back home and Belleville is only 2.5 hours away, it doesn't really make sense to have a whole lot of extra bodies around and paying NHL salaries if they're on one-way contracts. But Philip Gustafson, Jacob Bernard-Docker, Logan Shaw, all of whom are on two ways, by the way, all sent back to Belleville yesterday. In the case specifically of Gustafson and Bernard-Docker, doesn't make any sense to have them sitting around if they're not playing. Yeah. So that's part of the reason that they have gone back, and the fact that they're, well, for specifically for JBD, I think it's because he's on a two-way contract. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that in all likelihood we'll see probably the same lineup as the one that won in Columbus, I'm guessing, which means that Victor Mete probably remains in the mix back on defense. Mm-hmm. And up front, Tyler Ennis had actually a really good game the other night, I thought, against Columbus. So he'll likely remain in. That will leave the Bishop of Clark as the scratch for Ottawa.
Yeah, no, and hey, that makes sense on JBD, especially Branstrom sliding into that spot right now with Thomas Chabot. You know that Zub's going to be in the lineup. The coach likes Brown. And for JBD, hey, could he stay here? For sure, JR. What I look at him is whatever it is, keep playing, keep getting the reps. One other, I think one more real good summer for him, and I think by next fall he's a full-time NHL player. And as far as Gus the Bus, hey, this has got to get on track here of getting him playing and getting him playing well, because I'm assuming, well, I'm not assuming, he's going to be one of the two goaltenders here in Ottawa next year. So makes sense on both guys to get down and get them playing in Belleville.
No announcements as far as the goalie situation for tonight, but as you mentioned, all expectations are, despite Forsberg's really good game on Sunday, that Matt Murray will get the start tonight versus Buffalo. Again, a reminder that Sabres head coach Don Granato will join us in the show coming up at about 7:10 or so this morning. Look forward to that chat. All right, 6:29. So as most of us and most of you were sleeping last night, there was a Canadian going at it at the Australian Open. Number 14 men's seed Denis Shapovalov into the quarterfinals, attempting to make the semis for the first time at this Grand Slam in his short career. But he was taking on one of the all-time greats, Rafael Nadal. 20-time Grand Slam winner, and Nadal won set one, 6-3. He won set two, 6-4, and you're kind of thinking, well, that's the point where I shut her down, actually. That's the time I went to bed, and I go, ah, darn it, doesn't look like he's going to be able to do it. I wake up this morning, and I see, whoa, set three, Shapo wins, 6-4. Set four, Shapo wins, 6-3. So we're going to a fifth and deciding set in the heat of Melbourne. Shapovalov versus Nadal. Let's take you to match point.
He held the pose. Cue the applause. It's seventh heaven for Rafa in Melbourne. A seventh semi-final. That was a miracle.
There you go. So if you had trouble kind of making that out, yes. Rafael Nadal ends up winning it in that fifth and final set. 6-3 in a match that lasted 4+ hours and included, to the chagrin of Denis Shapovalov, several medical timeouts from Rafael Nadal, who at his age of 34, I believe it is.
35.
Doesn't quite have the vim and vigor that 22-year-old Denis Shapovalov has, and in the heat was doing all he could to slow down that match last night. Chapo, not very happy.
It's unfair, you know, how much Rafa's getting away with. I mean, I'm completely ready to play, and the clock is ticking. He had already taken two medicals. He was getting medically evaluated. That's what the ump said after the fourth set, getting medically evaluated. And after the evaluation, the guy goes and takes a toilet break. And it's just like, where's the line, you know? Like, where are you going to step on the players and say, okay, you know? And it's difficult. I mean, it was a big break after the fourth set for this reason. And the momentum just goes away. And, you know, it's much more difficult to play, I think.
All right. So, and it's not often we hear tennis players in particular are being that critical, I think, of a fellow competitor. And I think maybe his issue is more, though, with the official in question, that he wasn't enforcing the rules the way Shapovalov would have liked. Just your thoughts, and I know that you and I both weren't up to watch all of this go down, but just an overall thought on kind of pushing the limits like Nadal did.
You know what? Well, first of all, as far as Nadal, I mean, again, you're a legend, so I understand, and anybody that's ever been in the cramping, well, the old tummy goes the other way, but the calculated move just in review in the match, JR, between the fourth and the fifth, if I'm a veteran player at 35, I've won 20 Grand Slams, I'm pushing it as far as I can. I'm the star. And now as far as old Chapo, again, I don't know the relationship on the tour. What I love is this guy is a somewhat cocky, somewhat arrogant. He's being completely brutally honest, and I don't think there's a fault in what he's saying. It's just interesting that you are calling out one of the best players of all time, so. But I don't have a problem with it. And part of what I like about him and Felix in a very quiet way, JR, they feel like, hey, we're crashing ahead here. And, you know, hey, this is what I feel. And he's never been afraid, even when he lost yesterday, just tossing the racket and getting super emotional. So as I say, it's rare, but I think it just shows how hungry this guy is. And he really, really wants to be a champion.
All right. So Nadal, again, takes that fifth and deciding set after the long break after Shapo had won sets 3 and 4. Here's Rafa on that break after set four.
How did you turn this around and finish this match off?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I was completely destroyed after that. Yeah, very tough day, very warm. I know how difficult it is to play against a player like Dennis. No, he's very talented, very aggressive. He was serving huge, and especially the second serve. So, yeah, for me, it's amazing, honestly, to be in that semifinals.
There you go. Rafael Nadal in winning the fifth set and moving on to the semifinal at the Australian Open for the seventh time in his career. And for Chappell, close. And as you said, knocking at the door. Feels like there's going to be a breakthrough between either he or Felix or both in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
But there's a reason guys have won 20 Grand Slams. Yeah. And whether it's, first of all, it's immense talent, it's crazy amount of drive, and it's also maneuvering and using every nook and every cranny, every rule, every bending of the rule that you can to turn things in your favor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and again, I don't know, going back to Nadal when he was that age and he's going up against some of the greats, JR, he probably had to deal with some of the same things. So, yeah, a difficult one. And I also find for Nadal, I don't find from a profiling standpoint, other than, you know, he's a good-looking fella, very athletic. So much of the talk has always been about Federer being unbelievable and Joker, do you love him or hate him? With the handling of Joker, now Federer being out, I think this kind of makes people, at least for me, I'm actually a little bit more, I don't want to use the word attracted, but I just find Nadal to be more likable for some reason, you know, that. And I think for the tournament that I think they'd be pretty excited if he came through and ended up winning another major in Australia.
Well, it would, because we knew right from the start, because Federer is out for most of the season.
Yeah.
Whichever of Nadal or Djokovic won the first slam was going to take over the lead because the three of them are tied at 20 Grand Slams each, and then Joker gets tossed out of the tournament. So really the rooting interest, if you don't have a favorite tennis player and you want to see a record broken at your tournament, naturally people are going to gravitate toward Nadal. But as you said, he's a much more likable character than Djokovic is. So yeah. I think people are prone to cheer for him anyway.
Yeah, and I just say I think Joker is certainly even more across the line now where, yeah, I don't think he's going to get a lot of love. And I guess now with the new vaccine rules, the possibility he won't be able to play at the French Open either.
Nor the U.S. Open, the way it is. The way the rules are set right now, things can change between now and late May for the French Open and late August for the U.S. Open. Vaccination status may not be as important at that stage. We'll wait and see on that, but you're absolutely right. Right now, under the way the rules are set, the only Grand Slam he can appear in is Wimbledon. So we'll wait and see on that. Meanwhile, one other Canadian still alive in singles, Felix Auger-Aliassime, will play his quarterfinal match tomorrow morning, our time. You got to be a super fan. Either you're up late anyway, or you're a super fan to get up 3:30 in the morning, our time, tomorrow morning for Felix's match against number two seed Daniil Medvedev. And of course, because Djokovic was the number one seed and then got tossed out of the tournament late, they didn't name another number one seed. So Medvedev is really the de facto number one seed in this tournament. So Felix is getting the number one seeded Medvedev in the quarterfinal coming up early tomorrow morning, our time. We'll see if he can break through and represent Canada and make it into the semifinals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also wonder for Nadal. I know there's a little break, JR, but 35 years old, recovery from a long match like that, some of the cramping or whatever he was going through. So yeah.
He gets one extra day.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because his match obviously was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, this morning. Well, however the hours end, he's one day ahead of. So he gets actually a. I think the semifinals, I believe, are now set. So skipping 2 days, semifinals are now set on the men's side for Nadal in a couple of days. So he gets a 2-day break, which looked like, based on how much he had energy had to output last night, will be much needed.
Yeah.
All right, 6:38. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go through the rest of the hockey story from last night. Montreal got absolutely crushed in Minnesota with a couple of interesting spectators at that Montreal-Minnesota game last night. Inquiring minds want to know. We'll tell you who was there and what it all might mean. Canada's Olympic men's hockey team has been named with a couple of local names on it. Now, it's supposed to be officially named at 11 o'clock. Well, it will be at 11 o'clock this morning. A little issue with the IIHF kind of jumping the gun and putting the names out yesterday. Anyway, we'll go through that with you as well. A little CFL news for you, some NFL, and baseball's Hall of Fame. Busy Tuesday ahead. Don't forget some winning for you as well. As we'll have our $100 gift certificate from Gabriel Pizza. As part of our big game contest, we'll give away that between now and 10 o'clock. Stand by for your cue to text on that as we roll on here for a Tuesday morning. Ascends Game Day Tuesday on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Everybody, 842 somewhere. Not sure exactly. Is there a time zone that's 2 hours ahead of Eastern time zone? 2 hours ahead, obviously 2 hours behind us. There's an hour ahead and an hour and a half.
Well, there has to be.
Listening in Newfoundland.
Do they stop? I mean, I'm trying to think of, well, Bermuda would not be far enough off the coast for 2 hours.
No, I don't think there is. I think it's in the middle of the ocean.
Well, that's what I mean. So there is a time zone. Oh, there's no. Well, if you go.
Are there people living in a place where it's 8:43 in the morning now? I need to know.
I'm going for a little. I'm going caribou in Greenland.
Caribou. Hammer, can you look up what time is it in Greenland
now, I'm feeling like it's crossing up to Greenland. And then as you head south, I think it is, JR, in the South Pole.
South Pole?
Well, it's going to hit the South Pole at the end, is it not?
I've got Greenland as well. Right now it is 8:43 a.m.
You know what? One of the
Good
big,
morning.
One of the things there, when I used to fish off the Flemish Cap, that's where I knew I was in a two.
Nicely done.
There's a same song that comes on, a rock song, and I've watched Perfect Storm probably 100 times. And as they decide to go back out, JR, they decide to go out to the Flemish Cap in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, they press the old music box, and the same song, and I can't even but if I hear the song, it's the first thing I think of, right? Because they're going along, and they're not sure if they're going to fish, and all of a sudden, George Clooney comes out and says, "Let's go, boys," and he pushes it, and everybody's off and running, and all of a sudden, they're just catching fish all over the place out on the old Flemish Cap.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Just before the perfect storm.
It was the best of times.
Well, it was the worst.
The real key there is make sure the ice machine doesn't go, because that ended up sealing their fate, right? Mm-hmm. They were doing great, and then all of a sudden the ice went, and they said, okay, what are we going to do here? We're going to pack her in, and we're going to head to port there to get the best price, and didn't quite work out.
Steve texts in that says, part of Brazil also 2 hours ahead of us. So you know the part that bows out there, the fat part?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's... I think Rio is kind of where it starts to go down and in again. Yeah, I think it's where Rio is. Maybe a nice. I think Sao Paulo.
Oh, very
is in the
nice.
Interior.
Yeah.
Brasilia is the capital of Brazil. Okay. So anyway, Steve, thanks for the time zone update.
Yeah,
what do you got?
Nice.
Sao Paulo. 8:45 in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
Nice.
Okay. I don't think Argentina. What time is it in Buenos Aires right now? Is that an hour or is that 2 hours? I need to know.
Time zones of the world. No, you know what I'm feeling, though, JR? I'm feeling a little bit of Falkland Islands.
Nice. Okay.
I feel like I can see the Harrier jets coming in. And I end up watching the Margaret Thatcher movie. So right there, Falkland Islands, Hammer, off the east of Argentina. What are we feeling?
Well, first I had to go with the Buenos Aires, and that is now 8:45 a.m. as well.
Wow, that's incredible.
And now we're going to the Falklands.
I had no idea that part of South America was that far east of us.
Yeah,
I had sort of thought it was kind of maybe a little bit to the.
I agree with you. Right. I thought it was kind of a direct shot because when you travel south to a lot of places in South America, you end up being in the same time zone.
Seems to be there's plenty of places that are 2 hours ahead of us.
Falkland Islands.
Oh, wow. Are we there just mastering the geography of the planet right now?
Well, you guys opened the segment by saying, I don't think there is anything. And now that has
found
been
out,
proven.
There's probably hundreds of thousands, if not, well, no, there's millions of people that right now are celebrating the fact that in this 3 minute conversation, it's now 8:46. And good morning to all of you listening in the what is the name of the time zone? The Atlantic time zone is 1 hour ahead of us. What time is that?
I just deleted it.
Okay. Well, see if you can find out before the end of the segment, if you can. Okay. Let's talk about some hockey. There were a bunch of games around the NHL last night, 7 in total, including a couple of Canadian teams in action. The Montreal Canadiens were in action in Minnesota as their long, meandering road trip continues, and their season of absolute horror continues as well, this time in Minnesota.
Eriksson Ek wins the draw. Spurgeon across to Goligoski. Back in the middle, Greenway a shot. That was blocked. Goligoski takes a look, feeds Spurgeon, winds, fires, scores!
There you go. That would be the first goal for Minnesota last night. It actually tied the game at one. Mike Hoffman had opened the scoring for Montreal. But the floodgates were then opened, my friend, to, I believe, five in a row. Montreal got, or six in a row, and Montreal got one, and then Minnesota. So anyway, it was 8-2 when it was all said and done. Minnesota crushing Montreal as the Habs reached the halfway point of the season. I'm sorry, Montreal fans. You're only halfway through. I don't know what you did to deserve this. I hope you enjoyed the playoffs last year. At the 41-game mark, the Montreal Canadiens are sitting at 8 wins. 8 wins in 41 games so far this year. Dead last in the National Hockey League by a point to Arizona. But I don't think anybody saw this coming. And don't want to know if – I can't say that last night was rock bottom. There's been a lot of rock bottoms for Montreal this year.
Yeah, and if you're Arizona, Jerry, you shouldn't have hired a good coach, and that's another reason why you got to get rid of Jake Chychrun and anybody else. What is Montreal doing with all of these veteran players to be as bad as they are? And also, it is confirmed that Dorion and McGuire were at the game in Minnesota?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and I wonder, do you think that McGuire still has his apartment in Minnesota? Is that why?
He did a lot of NBC games in Minnesota
free place
last
to
year.
Stay?
Yeah,
it's,
that, that may be a good reason. Why not? So who wouldn't want to stop
maybe
in Minnesota?
Maybe even Dorion's helping him move. Like, if he's shutting down the shack, just said, hey, would you mind coming? Doing a few boxes here. We'll go for a cold beer. And I look from a scouting perspective, JR. Now, it's a night
off. Let me ask you this first. Do you think that Pierre Dorion and Pierre McGuire, confirmed to have been scouting that game last night in Minnesota, are there to watch Montreal, or are they there to watch Minnesota?
I have absolutely no idea.
Now, I want to guess.
Well, okay, here's my thought. It is a night off, and it is also different, I guess, if you go to Montreal. Montreal comes home and plays Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Now, Ottawa also plays, so it's a little bit easier to go and do it. I think, well, again, I would look at this and think, well, Minnesota, would they have interest in a Paul or a Sanford or Holden? Well, I don't really see anything coming off their roster. So, yeah, at this point, I don't have an answer for you, JR. And if it's Montreal, what is also interesting, I guess there's a little less talk. But generally what you'll do, and I everyone's different, but whenever we got into, I was working with George McPhee or John Ferguson, what we generally do if we were really going to a game to scout a team, we'd usually buy a ticket and just sit in the stands. So
you didn't want people to know you were
there? No, it wasn't any reason to. It was like, hey, slide in and watch. Yeah. But hey, there's a purpose to it. There's no connection to, like, you. UND playing, I don't think, you know, on a Monday night. So, hey, they have made a trek out there. And I try to go through the Montreal roster and try to look at anything that might be a fit, Jer. And I can't identify
it. Is Tyler Toffoli a possibility? Because I've always wondered about that. Because all the reports were when he was a free agent and eventually signed in Montreal was that Ottawa had made a pitch for him.
Yeah.
Obviously, his history with the 67 speaks to the fact that you would think he would have a comfort level here. And he's got, I think, 2 more years left on his deal at a pretty palatable amount. You know, he's just over $4 million.
Yeah.
And Ottawa has a hole at second line right wing. Like, for a lot of different reasons, that box is checked by Tyler Toffoli.
Yeah, I want to redo the segment, Hammer, because JR made an excellent point there. Now I feel a little bit down on myself. It was funny, combing through the roster.
You can put it on Twitter.
Yeah, no, no.
I want trademark.
Combing through the roster, JR, I agree, but I also kind of think he's one of the only tradable players on the team. But maybe to your point, that's what makes absolutely sense, is he'd end up doing something. So, no, I think for what you just pointed out, because I went through and, you know, people mentioned Josh Anderson. It's like, well, I think we've got enough of Josh Anderson to understand that, you know, the lack of hockey sense there and the lack of consistency, don't even touch it. And then, honestly, going through the rest of the roster, I couldn't see it. And what you just pointed out absolutely makes the most sense in watching Tyler Toffoli.
Now, to go to Minnesota, I mean, when you can, yeah, and you mentioned that they have conflicting schedules, but, I mean, you can get to Montreal very easily.
Very much
so. If they play on, I don't think, Ottawa doesn't play on Sunday, so they are bound and determined to go see Tyler Toffoli. They could have gone on Sunday, should they so choose. You know, I'm looking at it, you know, as kind of, I think it's probably a fact-finding mission on both. Montreal being for sure going to be a seller, and Minnesota, given the fact that they're playing really well, will be a buyer. You know, in Ottawa's case, if it is a Toffoli, makes interest. And if Minnesota is looking for one of Ottawa's UFAs, that maybe that makes sense. Now,
Hammer pointed out, though, most of those guys are just going to be draft picks, right? In Minnesota, generally, you're not trying to take anything off your team, but it's just speculation in our part. And the other thing, and again, just speculation, JR, you don't fly out to Minnesota on a Monday, though, unless there's something that's a bit time sensitive, in the sense of Montreal has already decided on some things that they're going to do here. And if Toffoli is, well, Toffoli, let's face it, he's going to have a market. And I'm also going to say, if I'm Tyler Toffoli, I really don't care about the Ottawa connection. and I would actually prefer just to go to a good team at this point. Yep. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, anything to read into? I mean, Ottawa's got a, mind you, much maligned, but they have a pro scouting staff. When the general manager goes and Pierre Maguire goes, who's the player development guy, but let's face it, he's kind of his right-hand man. When they go and they go together, anything to read into that?
Oh, absolutely. It means a lot. I mean, and I think it's when you really are going to go make deals, again, there can be times where you just decide, hey, let's go and watch a game. But to go to Minnesota in the middle of the winter, but when you send two people, always that you're in a discussion that there's something going on for sure. And it's just really nice to be at a game and you just kind of go back and forth. And after the game, you maybe go and grab a beer and just talk about what you saw. And so, no, I read lots into the fact that both of them are there.
When you would scout, and there'd be odd time when you would, there would be two of you, right? Or maybe even three of you.
Yeah, not at the pro side, Jared, that's real seldom because you're always sitting in the press box at amateur games. But two is a signal for sure that there's something going on.
So when you went with somebody else, be it David Poyle or whatever, and you went and looked at a player, would you talk about that player throughout the game? Hey, did you notice? Did you see this, and this? Or would you keep everything secret? And then it's like, okay, at the end of the game, we'll go for a beer and compare notes. You know, you say your positives, and I'll say my positives, and we'll see if everything matches up. Like, did you kind of talk it through, or did you save it all for the end?
Well, no. The issue is, JR, is you're sitting in a press box with a bunch of other scouts generally, though, so you're not having the conversation,
right? Would you pass notes?
Yeah, you could. I mean, now I guess you could even just text each other if you wanted. But generally, you've talked about going in. Now you just end up watching, and depending on the dynamic, the manager may be kind of looking to see what you think. And that would be generally like the manager's not coming back. And I'm like, well, David, tell me what you saw. they want to know, hey, what do you think? And then you kind of go through it and then whatever the other dynamics. But it can be a whole lot of fun. And it's a real good way to end up scouting in my estimation, because, sending a single person in there, like I said, the extra set of eyes and just the dialogue that you can have, JR, can be really, really healthy. And your point on Toffoli is an excellent one.
So we'll see. If you're Ottawa, and look, they're not a playoff team this year, it would be fair to say unusual for a team that is not in a playoff chase to be acquiring a player at the trade deadline. Like, traditionally, that type of trade is made in the summer. But I guess if you really like that player, it's almost like you've got to take on, and you want to add that player, it's almost like you got to make a move on him because he's going to go at the trade. I don't think there's any doubt he's going at the trade deadline. I think there's enough, he's got a good enough play. He was good in the playoffs last year. He's got a good enough track record. He's won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
All the reasons that you might like a Tyler Toffoli, he's probably going to move at the trade deadline. And so if you want that player, as crazy as it sounds, that Ottawa, a non-playoff team, could be in there having to pitch against playoff teams for a player like that.
Well, and he also just fits into being a traditional trade JR that could be done at any time. You know what I mean? It's not a expiring contract. As you said, he's got a couple years after this one. So, there's lots of reasons why that would end up making sense. And from an Ottawa perspective, I think that's a nice sign if you've got the green light to fill is what a very obvious hole. What would also be really nice, if you ever went down that path, as you get Connor Brown healthy, if a Pinto ever returned, you might have an opportunity here. But more than anything, just as far as a top six, if Toffoli is looked at to play with Stutzel and Formanton, or even slide in with Norris and Tkachuk, to have a nice little test ride here for the rest of the way, to have a top six that you legitimately think you can go into next year. And then if you want to get Paul signed and put him with Pinto when he returns and Brown, it makes a lot of sense on lots of levels. And as you said, from Montreal perspective, it's a trade that can happen any time. It doesn't have to be at the trade deadline.
I don't think that Ottawa would be willing to give up, unless perhaps it was lottery protected, their first round draft pick for this coming draft. But what do you think is the cost of a Tyler Toffoli? Could it be as high as a first rounder, or could it be an A prospect, an A-level prospect?
Well, when you historically look at players, JR, that are on expiring contracts that have gone for first-round picks, I mean, Savard went for a first-round pick, so absolutely.
Part of the reason that teams are willing to pay for a first-round pick is, A, they really like the player and think they can help them, but B, they aren't tied to their contract for beyond that year. It's actually an advantageous thing, whereas Toffoli has two more years after this
one. But it is... In the case of Ottawa, the fact that it's not a bad contract, you go more into the Coleman-Goudreau theory, right? You're looking at the fact that it is fixed costs. To me, that's valuable. Mm-hmm. Like on Tyler Toffoli, you know, hey, yeah, I don't agree
with what I said. I'm just putting it out
there. No, I understand. But no, the fact that it is a fixed cost, no, it makes it sensible for sure, first-round pick. Now, if you're also Montreal, are you trying to accumulate picks? I would also think from what is in Ottawa's system and whatever names you want to end up throwing out there, that Montreal would probably be looking more at, hey, could we get a Bernard Docker? Could we get a Lassie Thompson?
Do you think that Sokolov is an A prospect at this point?
No, I wouldn't go A. But again, what Montreal may see in the player, mm-hmm. You know, and the thoughts on them a lot depends on what Jeff Gorton saw. When he was, you know, obviously with the Rangers and what Ken Hughes just thinks of the overall group. So lots of speculation. But to your point, I mean, like I said, the next part would just be what kind of a mental impact. And for Tyler Toffoli, it's a rare dynamic. Like you said, he's familiar here in Ottawa. By all accounts, enjoyed Ottawa. But we saw this even when, and it always escapes me, when they made the trade with Edmonton years ago for the Czech fella.
Emski,
you know, the guy's like, are you kidding me? Getting traded for the first time in my career to a non-playoff team? You always have to think about the athlete. I think about Paquette a few years ago when he got the call from Tampa that he'd been moved to Ottawa. Is Tyler Toffoli ready to come to one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League and help them build up right now? And I don't have the answer for that.
Well, I can't speak for any. Everybody's going to be wired differently. I would think, though, that you could, if you're a player, and especially if you have 2 years left, could fairly look at the situation here in Ottawa and look at it, and maybe you'd have to be the eternal optimist, but look at it and go, that is a team that's going to take a leap here, and it might take a leap sooner rather than later, and I wouldn't mind being a part of that.
Oh,
like there's
an
excitement level when that team all of a sudden goes from, not from 0 to 60, but they're kind of putting along at like 25 miles an hour right now, and then all of a sudden that rocket fuel, and whether it's the addition of a Jake Sanderson or whatever, or just the natural maturation of the young group, all of a sudden they catch fire, and this becomes a, you know, relatively good hockey team in fairly short order.
Oh, I totally agree. And now also, if you kind of trace it back, it sounds like he had a decision whether to sign in Ottawa and Montreal. I would think based on the money, JR, although it was a weird summer.
It might have been the term, though, too.
Yeah, no. But my point is that psychologically, where if you had a player that had only played in L.A. and all of a sudden it's being flipped to Ottawa, but with the dynamic, what you pointed out, he's also won a Stanley Cup, and maybe he looks at it and says to himself, not the worst thing in the world that I'm ending my hockey at the end of April, and we've got a good up-and-coming group, and whatever his I think they showed, I hope I'm accurate and say, they showed his wife during the Stanley Cup last year.
Yes.
Like, whatever the dynamic is as well, like, hey, maybe they look at Ottawa and say, this would be awesome. Now, those are all the questions, but more to what you're pointing out, and the for them to fly out to Minnesota, like I said, you're not going halfway across the country just for no purpose. That, to me, when you're sending two people, signals is something pretty good. And the fact that they're in the press box is also interesting.
On his wife, and she's very active on social media, and I don't follow a lot of players, let alone their wives, on social media. But for some reason, her feed, especially in the playoffs, ended up in my feed quite a bit.
She was pretty pumped during the
I think her I don't think it's her given name, but her nickname is Cat. I don't know if she's from Ottawa or not. I don't think if they go back to all the way back to time with the 67s or not. But again, you know,
I'm going LA.
Well, somebody out there will know. I know that for sure. But anyway, that would be a long-term relationship if it goes back to his days with the 67s. All right, thoughts on anything we chat about? Always welcome. Would you, if you're a Sens fan, be willing to give up, and it would be a pretty good package, I would think, for Tyler Toffoli? Does that seem like the type of player that Ottawa should be adding? Let us know what you think. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll come back. We'll chat more about that. Your reaction, get you set for a Sens game night. In fact, we'll talk to Buffalo Sabres head coach Don Granato as they're in town to play the Sens tonight. He'll join us next right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.